Hey, what's up? Hello. Welcome to Sounds Fake But Okay, a podcast where an arrow ace girl, I'm Sarah, that's me.
And a demi-straight girl, that's me, Kayla.
And I'm Yasmin Benoit, hi.
Talk about all things to do with love, relationships, sexuality, and pretty much anything else we just don't understand.
On today's episode, an interview with Yasmin Benoit.
Sounds fake, but okay. Welcome back to the pod.
I don't have one ready. God. I won't do it, Kayla, this time. It's unprofessional.
Don't do it this time. Today, we have a special guest.
Yes.
It's Yasmin.
Hi.
Welcome to the pod. I feel like we've been wanting to have you on for probably forever.
Yeah. I pitched it first, so I was waiting on you guys.
That's true. We had to get our shit together.
We had some technical stuff to figure out, and then I was moving across the country, but we did it. We're here.
It's finally happening.
Fantastic. All right, so this is normally where I say, Kayla, what are we talking about today? But I think it's kind of clear that we're talking to Yasmin today. So I guess we can just dive in. I guess for those of our listeners who live under rocks, which is, you know, their prerogative, but if they do, Yasmin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your, like, role in ASPEC communities?
I'm a model and asexuality activist. I'm also aromantic, so my activism relates to that. And I'm on the board of directors of AVEN, and I've just been doing a lot of activism recently. That's my role, really. Let's talk a lot.
I always forget you're on the board of AVEN, and then I'm like, oh, wow, she does it all. The woman can do anything. How did you first start getting into activism for asexuality?
I feel like, I don't know, the community just nominated me to do it, essentially. It wasn't actually on my to-do list of things. I just kind of mentioned it. And then I saw that there was an asexuality conference in London, not that long after I kind of came out, and I thought, well, I'm like 25 minutes from London, so I might as well go. And I said, do you need any help with anything? And they're like, do you want to be a speaker? And then from there, it just kind of, people just asked me to talk at their unis or just do some articles or things like that. And then it just kind of snowballed, I guess, when people realized that there was someone who was willing to put their name and their face out there and volunteer for stuff, I guess.
I feel like before you started really going out and doing everything, it was just kind of random people or kind of AVEN would be just speaking or doing engagements. It really, we didn't have actual people, just like single people, not an organization that was actually going out and doing stuff. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there were people like David Jay, I guess, is one of the most recognizable people. That was kind of the first person I thought of, and I knew that there was some, my local pride has always been quite good for asexual visibility, so I had met some people there who I'd end up doing documentaries with in the future, which was cool. So I'd kind of, I'd seen people around, but I guess I hadn't seen the same person doing a lot publicly, and I didn't really expect to become that person either, so it's funny how it worked out.
Yeah. Now here we are. I guess in terms of your own, like, arrow ace journey, I know you mentioned, like, before any of this you had been going to Pride and stuff. What was your journey in terms of realizing you were arrow ace in terms of, like, figuring out what that all was?
Well, I guess for me, considering that I didn't really know about or think much about the whole split attraction thing until I was already doing the activism. So for me, I just kind of blended it all into one feeling, so I felt like, yeah, the discovery was kind of like equal for both, because I noticed either one or both of them around the time of puberty, when people seemed to notice that they weren't asexual and they started becoming more interested in not just playing together but like dating each other, whatever that means when you're a kid. I don't know, I still don't know. So yeah, that's kind of when I thought, oh, there's a thing happening. And I guess that'll happen to me, but I'm not going to encourage it because it seems like effort. And then, yeah, and then I guess I got older and people took note of what I wasn't doing quite a lot and kept asking me questions. And then I had to try and analyze it and research it and look within myself and try to give them answers. And then it took eventually for someone to ask me what my sexuality was. And I said, I guess I'm straight, but I don't like guys, just because straight's the default. So that's what I went for. And they were like, well, then you can't really be straight. And they're like, do you like girls? And I was like, no. And they said, oh, maybe you're like asexual or something. And then I Googled it and I was like, yeah, there we go. So now I have an answer. But unfortunately, no one else knows what it means. So it's half helpful. But yeah, so that's kind of how I worked it out. And then aromanticism, I guess, was later, but I assumed I already had that answer. So
yeah, I think that's very similar to my experience where, like, to me, because I am both aro and ace, they just go together. And so Kayla always yells at me for conflating them too much on this podcast, but, you know. It is also interesting, though, that you say that, like, when you were, like, going through puberty and, like, other people were realizing they weren't asexual, why haven't I been thinking of it that way the entire time? It's, you're the ones who are doing weird stuff. all you aloes. I don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how it seemed. I mean, one minute, no one cares. No one's thinking about dating. No one's interested in sex or finding out what it is. And you're just playing with your Lego and skipping and minding your own business. And then all of a sudden, it's like something switched. It was like I came back after the summer holidays and I was like, what happened? Girls are like fighting each other over boys. People are crying over boys. And I was like, why don't we just skip hopscotch or something? Like, what's, I don't understand. So yeah, for me, it seemed like everything else and other people had changed. But yeah. And I guess this is going to afflict me as well, whatever's happened to all of you, but apparently not.
Right, yeah. That's definitely a very similar experience to what I had.
I guess I'm just kind of curious about your coming out process, because I think it's so different for everyone. And like Sarah and I have had, you know, like certain experiences, and I know we've always gotten a lot of questions from listeners about like advice for coming out or just talking more about that. So I'd love to hear about kind of like how that went for you, or, you know, if it was like a hard process, if it was, I don't know, just kind of all about that.
Well, it's always hard to answer, because like sometimes people ask me and then I'm talking about the process, they're just talking about like the moment, and I'm always like, it wasn't a moment. Because if it was a moment, that would insinuate that people knew what I was talking about and believed me straight away, which wasn't the way it went. Like, I've been, as I said, I realized that I was asexual and aromantic when I was, like, in primary school. So I guess your equivalent of, like, elementary school. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to tell people that for well over 10 years, and people just didn't believe me until it was literally in the newspaper. So It's been like a whole long thing of me going, oh, actually, well, I'm asexual. Oh, I don't do that. And they're like, oh, well, it's great that you're so well behaved. Or, oh, it's great that you're focusing on your education. Or, great, don't be a slut. That's good. Or, oh, it'll kick in, or you'll grow out of it. So I've literally been getting exactly the same reactions to trying to come out, and exactly the same, you'll grow into it, or you won't say that when you're older, from the ages of like 10 to 22. So I've just kind of been unsuccessfully coming out for over half of my life. And then when it was in the newspapers in the UK and magazines and stuff, then people were like, oh, wow, Yasmin, you just came out. How brave. Have you not been listening to me for the past 10 years?
Been trying.
Like, I told you this before. We sat down like 5 times and you just didn't believe me. So yeah, I feel like my coming out thing has just been kind of confusing and surreal. I feel like I've only now successfully managed to do it, thanks to UK press, not thanks to me actually saying it.
I think a lot of people could have experiences like that, though. I think like a lot of people try to come out to their parents or family and they've never heard of asexuality before. So, yeah. And like we've talked about this a lot. You have to like sit someone down and do an entire TED talk. But like you can't just come out in a moment and then it's done, like you might be able to when you're gay, because you would have to go through and educate them. And then, yeah, they might not even believe that it is actually a thing.
Yeah, you don't really get to just sit everyone down and say it and then they accept it and then word spreads throughout the community and then you never have to mention it again. Like, you have to do it all every time you meet someone and that whole, oh, are you seeing someone conversation happens? Like, it's a whole thing. You have to do it 100 times. So I feel like I've literally done it hundreds of times.
Yeah, you, like, have to hold people's hand to, like, walk them through the conversation and be like, this is what it's like to not feel attraction to other people, and it's normal. And then it's like, their just mind is blown, and you're like, well, it's not that complicated for me, but I recognize that you don't understand this, so like, here we are. I'm doing the TED Talk again.
Yeah, sometimes I just can't be bothered to do the TED Talk, so I'm very good at avoiding the conversation completely and being completely uneducational because I just can't be bothered.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to do this right now. Like, I'm tired. You are a person I don't know very well. Like, I'm not doing this right now. Like, who knows how you're going to react? I'm not going to put myself in that position.
Mm-hmm.
I guess speaking of, like, the coming out situation, is there something that once, I guess, the people in your life kind of viewed asexuality as a more legitimized sexuality because it was in the press or that sort of thing, was there a question that you were asked a lot that you, like, hated being asked? Like, is there something that people always come to you that you just, like, don't like, or it comes from a place of ignorance that you would, like, want to clarify to the world?
I feel like one I hear, like, within family the most is, like, what people say to me or my mom, they're like, oh, no grandchildren for you. And I'm like, I'm not infertile, guys. That isn't a gift. If you're asexual, then you could never have a family or whatever. Like, that's always one I find annoying because people say it, like, so sympathetically as though I've just told them that I'm, like, barren or something. It's like, that's not what I was saying. Those two things don't add together. So that's one thing I've always found kind of weirdly common as, like, a go-to thing to say, that I can't have children. So
like, as a person who is aero ace and also just, like, doesn't want kids, I'm in that, like, weird situation where it's like, no, I don't want kids and I'm not going to have kids, but I could have kids. And then it's just, like, a whole explaining the situation.
I mean, just along the line of the kids thing, I just think it's, like, it's so interesting that people would, like, look to your mom and be like, oh, I'm so sorry you're never going to have grandkids. Because, like, it's not about, you know, it's not, like, about your mom, it's not about your family, it's about you. So it's just, like, that whole thing just blows my mind that people say things like that. But anyway, I guess along the lines of, like, being, like, obviously you've done a lot of interviews, you've been asked a lot of questions by a lot of people. So is there anything, like, as you've experienced kind of being interviewed and, like, being kind of the spokesperson for asexuality, is there anything that comes with that that's been really hard? Because I'm assuming, you know, like, the people that are interviewing you for a magazine or something, they're not always going to be ace or even queer or anything. So does that come with a lot of difficulty?
I think it's always, you always kind of get worried when you know you're talking to someone who doesn't actually know what you're talking about. I often ask people to, like, read back what I've said to make sure that they put it down right, because I've had issues like where I've said I'm aromantic, I don't experience romantic attraction, and they wrote down she doesn't believe in human relationships, which isn't the same thing. And I'm very glad I asked them that, otherwise that would have been published in, like, national newspapers. So things like that, or also, like, if I've written something and I spent, like, 8 loads of time and done, like, a 500 word essay on something, and then people just comment going, oh, well, she's just an attention-seeking snowflake. And I'm like, did you not read the whole thing I just wrote for you?
I mean, obviously not.
It's things like that where...
I mean, obviously not.
It's good. I feel like it's important to speak outside of the asexual bubble because I don't need to educate asexual people about asexuality. They get it. But at the same time, when you do speak outside of it, and then people just, like, gain nothing from it, then I'm like, how is this gonna work if people aren't actually listening or prepared to listen? So that part's kind of exhausting when you put time into it and just have hundreds of people who have obviously just didn't pay any attention to what you said.
Right. I was recently talking to someone who used to be my boss when I was interning somewhere, and I was, like, talking to him about, like, my career, and, like, he was looking at my resume, and he saw this podcast on my resume, and he was like, oh, like, what's it about? And I told him, and he was like, oh, are you ace? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, that's a really good thing to, like, write about, like, you know, if you want to be a writer, like, that's a good perspective to, like, put in the world. And I was telling Kayla about this, and she seemed, like, so surprised that he had said that, and like I was like,
I
was like, that is very pure, I guess. Like, it's like I'm in LA now, so it's like, yeah, that's gonna be a more common reaction because it's a liberal bubble or whatever, but like still, it's like when you do, I don't know where I was going with this, but when, but like when you do have someone who like reacts well, it's, it makes you feel so good, but that's only, that only happens some of the time, and it's very disheartening when the opposite happens.
Yeah, I think I was just like shocked to hear that someone who I'm assuming is like a straight white man,
he is, yes,
even knew what even knew what asexuality was, and then was like so excited for you and was like, you need to like put this out in the world. Like, I just feel like I never have heard of people reacting like that when they are outside of the community, and I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, what a magical man.
What a magical man.
Yeah,
I've had a few straight white guys that have been surprising in those, like when I'm like, when they're hitting on me or something and I say it, and they're like, oh I had a friend like that, and I'm like, oh cool, okay, like, oh I know what that is, and I'm like, great, bye then. So it's like, it's sometimes it goes like that.
I was gonna say, there was a time, I've talked about this before, where I was on like dating apps and I had put that I was demisexual in my bio, and I was expecting people to be rude, and then I was like, oh, I can take the rude comments and put them on Twitter and it'll be like a fun discourse thing, and then everyone was really nice, and I, you know what I mean, not fun, but I was like, this will be, you know, something that can be, we can start a discussion about this, and then everyone was nice, and I was like, well,
like a case study.
Yeah, and then there was nothing, and I was like, well, that's good, but...
But the content!
I know, I was like, my content! No, I mean, obviously it's very, very good, but I was just shocked that, like, no one was being rude to me.
You were also in another liberal bubble of a place, so... Because that was in Ann Arbor, wasn't it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, if I had done that somewhere else, it probably would have been very bad, but anyway.
Amazing. So, Yasmin, you started the This Is What Asexual Looks Like hashtag. Mm-hmm. What was your inspiration for that? Like, walk us through it.
I mean, well, I was just kind of trying to show that there isn't an asexual way to look or dress. I mean, originally it came from a series I was writing for Queer Fashion, and I was thinking of a title, and I thought, well, let me do a title that could also be a hashtag, because the whole point in the series was to show the diversity of the asexual community. So, yeah, it was just because people would often say to me that I don't look asexual, and therefore find it harder to believe that I'm asexual. And I'd always be like, well, what does asexual look like to you? How do you think I should look? And I realized that however people expect asexual people to look, it's not like me. So yeah, I was just kind of trying to show that, I don't know, whatever image they have, that the community's way more diverse than that, and also give the community a tool to show themselves instead of always having to rely on the media to do it. Because if they did, then I don't know, you wouldn't really get a good picture of what the community actually looks like.
Yeah, as I was like scrolling through Twitter or looking at all the things that were like tagged with that, I was like getting emotional. I was like, look at all these people, they all look different. And then I was like, wait, why am I crying? I guess also just in regards to the fact that like you had people telling you didn't look like you were ace. You do a lot of like modeling and that sort of thing. Is how, like, what has that been like doing modeling like as an ace person? Because a lot of people view like modeling as a very sexualized kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms like logistically or practically, the main thing for me is like as a model, you should kind of be able to just adapt to anything or be up mm-hmm. for anything, essentially, like whatever mm-hmm. you're kind of approach for or put to, whatever the kind of designer or the photographer wants you to do, you're just supposed to be on it because that's the point, you're like the mannequin. So for me, it was already challenging in the sense that I'd kind of be like, there are things an impression I don't want to create, because mm-hmm. there's two types of modeling and they often overlap. You're either selling a product or you're selling yourself, or it's kind of both. But I try to keep it more on the I'm showing a product as best as I can, but I'm not the product myself. So if I felt like I was doing something that was aimed at titillating somebody and that's the point, then I'm like, no. So I've had things where, like, I don't know, where photographers have gotten annoyed at me or designers have gotten annoyed at me or like, because I haven't wanted to do a certain thing and they think I'm stifling their creativity or whatever. But yeah, usually nowadays I think it's not bad because I'm picky, and I think people have kind of gathered the whole asexual thing by now, so a lot of the things I do kind of overlap. So yeah, it's not so bad nowadays, but before it was kind of harder to navigate it, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like just like trying to imagine myself in that situation, like there would be some stuff that I just feel like I would not be comfortable doing. And then it's like a whole situation of like, you have to explain why, and then here you are doing a TED Talk again. So it's good that you're in a place now where you, like, I guess, are encountering that less.
Yeah, I guess just because now people, it's kind of like I'm the asexual model, so people kind of approach it from that angle, or it's kind of obvious when they see me through social media, so probably not the best person to pick for a very explicit bondage shoot, because I'm probably not going to be, well, the people do still pitch that to me, I don't know why, but I'm the wrong person for that. So yeah, I think nowadays it's just a bit more kind of tailored to me, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because people do kind of view you as like asexual model, like, and I think a lot of people when they think about like ambassadors to the ace community, like they think of David J and they might think of you. So do you feel like you're like an ambassador to like for the community, or do you feel like you're just like living your life and then you kind of had this label given to you?
I mean, it was kind of given to me, but when it's given to you a certain amount of times, you just have to be like, okay, it's a thing. I think it would be naive and possibly irresponsible for me to be like, no, I'm not representing anybody, I'm just doing whatever the hell I want to, because it kind of does end up reflecting other people, so I do have to think about what I say, or I don't know, how I act, or not put really dumb stuff on the internet or something, because it kind of does end up reflecting other people. And I know I have younger followers, despite some of my content, who are like, oh, I look up to you as a role model. I'm like, okay, don't copy everything I do. But yeah. So yeah, I guess I kind of am, as unlikely as that is, and as unlikely as I thought it would be. I thought if the asexual community were picking an ambassador, they'd pick someone who was a bit less confusing, because straight up, when most people see me, they're really like, huh? You? Really? Like, this is who we're going with? So, but yeah, I guess that just goes to show that the community is a pretty accepting place, because me and people like David J, we're not exactly in similar boxes, so...
Yeah, and I think the fact that you are so different from what a person might assume an Aeroace person looks like also kind of helps the cause in being like, this is a very, like, recognizable person within the community, and she's not what you expect. Like, it kind of reminds people, like, the whole this is what asexual looks like thing. We don't all look the same. We all live our lives very differently. Is there a part of, like, being sort of, like, an ambassador for the community that you don't like?
I don't know. I mean, I guess one thing, I guess, that you always kind of worry about, I guess, well, actually, I've only really started thinking about it since I joined Twitter, and I only joined Twitter last year, and I thought, God, I hope I don't get cancelled for something. Which is something I had never thought about when I was just on Instagram. When I was on Twitter and, like, you see so much stuff going on, so many opinions, so at least one person gets cancelled per week. And I'm thinking, God, have I ever, like, could anyone drag anything up on me? But I've always been quite responsible on the internet, so I don't think they can. But I'm always like, God, I hope I don't, like, say something wrong. Especially as, like, I'm learning as I go as well. I don't pretend to be, like, a LGBT plus expert. I probably can't tell you the definitions of everything, or pretend I understand everything, or recognize all the flags. So there are some things where I'm like, I don't actually know what we're talking about right now, so I'm just going to try and brush up on it. So I guess in those senses, I'm like, oh, I hope I don't, like, mess that up, and then everything just comes crashing down in a day when you've put so much work into it. So that's the main pressure, I think. Not getting canceled.
I think we've had, like, a sort of similar situation, although our audience is a lot smaller than yours, but just in terms of, like, us saying something offhand and someone will be like, will, like, come after us on the internet or like leave a mean review, and it's like, you can, if you have a concern, like, we can talk about it. Like, you don't have to cancel us immediately. Like, we're still learning. There's a lot. There's a lot happening here. We're not perfect.
Yeah, so I think when you talk a lot, as you guys do, and as I end up doing, there's always a chance that, especially if you get too comfortable and, like, your humor comes out, and my humor can be a bit inappropriate, so it could be a whole thing. So I'm... That's, I don't know, something that I have to think about a bit more nowadays.
Yeah, Kayla and I have that problem because, I mean, we've known each other for 4 years. We lived with each other for a lot of that time, so we know each other very well. So the things that we might say to each other, we may not necessarily be wanting to say to everyone who listens to our podcast, and you have to kind of be aware that you're not just talking to the other person, you're talking to a lot of people. Some people, like, listen with their parents or, like, listen with... And I'm like, oh boy, pressure's on.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, it's like more pressure than you would think than, you know, like a lot of stuff, you know, has been happening on Twitter where people are being like really nasty on Twitter and putting ace people in hate groups. And then there's the whole thing with Wikipedia.
I've been in those ones.
See, somehow we have not been in it yet. And I don't know how. But it's just, it's almost like you have to pick your battles, too, of... There's so much discourse that goes on that you kind of have to decide when you're going to jump in and kind of go towards the nastier side, too. Because obviously you could choose to stay out of it and just continue doing interviews. But I think you've done a really good job of kind of like getting in and talking about the bad stuff, too, and representing that, you know, like it's not all, you know, great all the time.
Yeah. But then at the same time, I'm always like, I don't want to be too much of a downer. So I try to, like, I don't know, shine light on, like, the little nice things that go on, but I don't want to seem oblivious either. I don't want to be, like, I don't know, seem disconnected because I'm already talking about the good things. So it's, like, a whole balance. Like, navigating Twitter is a whole new thing that I'm still working on. Like, that social media platform is different to Instagram, like, completely. Different.
Yeah, I mean, Kayla... You run more of our social media than I do, but I have used my own personal Twitter for a while, and it's definitely... We had a Twitter before we had an Instagram. The Instagram came pretty late in the game, and it's definitely a much different experience.
Yeah, I think, like, a lot of the asexual community has kind of moved from, like, places like Tumblr to Twitter, and so it's just, like, the asexual audience that's on Twitter is just so much bigger, and it's also very diverse. And so, you know, anytime you say anything, it could be, like, you could be saying, like you said, you could be saying something that you didn't even realize was something that's wrong, and then you have to keep learning, and it's hard when you're in a position where you have an audience at all, and then you're also still learning.
Hashtag canceled.
And I don't even, like, I've never had Tumblr, so, well, I mean, I have one, but I don't, like, use it. But I know there are loads of asexual people on Tumblr, and sometimes I'll hear things, like, months later. People are like, oh, there was a whole thread about this thing you said on Tumblr. And I was like, what? Now I have to, like, go through Tumblr and find it. Or I'm like, I didn't know this whole conversation was happening. Or usually it's good stuff. Sometimes I'm like, I wish I'd been around for that conversation. But it's like, I know, it's hard to keep up with all the social media platforms.
Yeah, and you got to find the right balance of just knowing when to... get in the argument and knowing when to just not feed the trolls. So that's always a fun balance to to have. Kayla mentioned something about diversity earlier. I know a lot of times, or at least it has in the past happened, where the ASPEC community has been criticized for being like a very white space. As an ASPEC person who is not white, do you agree with that? Like, I guess, do you feel like that is an issue, or like, what can be done about it?
I mean, I think it's one of those things where it depends what kind of demographic you're in as to what you see more, I guess, because I think that because people can obviously see I'm not white, I then tend to get more of a Black ace audience, or an audience of like non-white aces, so then I see more of them than I guess if you were white you probably wouldn't have seen them as much. I found that when I'm associated with something, more people of color who are ace come out, because they probably wouldn't have felt as comfortable doing that otherwise. But yeah, because I mean, I get it. Like when you're just online, I kind of thought I don't really see any black ace people, but this was before I really started mentioning being ace online. When I started doing that, I then started to notice more. But I think that in terms of our representation, it definitely is more whitewashed, I guess. And so that obviously creates more of an impression about most asexual people being white. And I think that also in the LGBT plus community and in the ace community in general, I think white people are just more likely to be louder about it. I think minorities are just more likely to kind of keep it to themselves for, I don't know, either personal reasons or cultural reasons or whatever. So for that reason, I think it's just kind of less obvious. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, I personally know quite a lot of black ace people since I started doing this. And when I did Ace of Clubs, a good half of the room were black, and we all sat together to just like revel in that experience for a change. I was like, not to segregate, but we're just gonna have a moment over here, just because this doesn't usually happen. So yeah, I guess it just kind of depends on how, if you see representation, you're more likely to feel a part of something, and then you're more likely that it becomes more obvious, I think.
Mm-hmm. And that's why hashtag this is what asexual looks like matters.
So yes.
Speaking of Ace of Clubs, can you tell our listeners about that whole situation?
Well, that was like, it was really random because I just got like a Facebook message from someone who worked at Budweiser, and I thought it was spam, so I ignored it for ages. Because I thought, why would someone from Budweiser be messaging me? So I just ignored it. And then they kept like contacting me, and I was like, oh, this is real. I'm sorry. And then they were like, yeah, we have an idea, because Budweiser was sponsoring Pride in London, and we kind of wanted to pitch it to you. And I was like, oh, okay. But I went to like their building, and I was so surprised. They had like a whole slideshow prepared. Like they had done their research. Like they had like ace activists on there and ace pride pictures and more flags than I knew the names of. And I was like, wow, you guys, like, I'm so impressed. And he bought me cookies. It was lovely. And then they were like, yeah, we're thinking of doing some kind of bar, but we actually want the asexual community involved in it. And we want an asexual person hosting it. So could you do it? Are you interested in helping? And I was like, yeah. So then for a while we were kind of planning things, and I was trying to ask the asexual community for ideas without saying that it was going to happen. So I was like, hypothetically, if something did happen, what would you want? And then after a while, I was like, okay, it's actually happening, just so you know, this is a thing. And then, yeah, and then at kind of at Pride, or I think it was the weekend before, we had a venue in Soho in London, and we had ace flags and ace clubs everywhere, and this is what asexual looks like, and purple pillows and everything. And yeah, I pretty much just got to host like a, it was more of like a bar than a club, because you could, they had bean bags and things, like you could chill. So yeah, and that's kind of how it went down. But it was me, it was mainly me, but we had to say it was me and Aven, but mainly Aven, because I was under 25, and for legal reasons I can't promote alcohol under 25. But yeah, it was mainly me. With some assistance from some of the people at Aven, I ran it past them. And yeah, so that's just kind of how it all randomly came to be.
It's so cool that like Budweiser like had all of this like planned out, because like usually when I'm like, I'm gonna think of beer, I'm not gonna think of like, oh, supporting the asexual community, that and beer goes right together.
Yeah. It's surprising for me too.
Right, like it's like beer's often like associated with like toxic masculinity, and that exactly doesn't exactly match up always with asexuality, but that's really cool.
And especially as, I mean, they donated to Aven, they gave me some money, and they put, I mean, to open a bar in the center of London, it must have been at least £15,000. Like it was a lot. And considering that they were sponsoring Pride in London, it would have been a lot easier and gotten them as much positive press to just do like a trans bar or a gay bar or like a lesbian night or something. That would have been easier to do than to bother doing all this research and doing something that arguably might not have worked. because there were quite a few asexual people who were like, well, I don't drink and I don't agree with Bad Boys is sponsoring, blah, blah, blah. So I was thinking this could totally backfire and then it will never happen again. But they took a risk, which I appreciate, and it actually worked. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't drink either, but I would love to show the fuck up to that. I would be like, hey, can I get a Coke? I'm ready to party. Like,
and it was a free bar. So.
Oh, sweet. I think that's such an awesome lesson, though, to, like, the rest of the queer community and corporations and everything, that, like, asexual people are there and they're interested and they will show up. Because I think, like, there's so much discourse about whether ace people even belong in the queer community and, you know, like, not just straight people, but queer people, like, not believing it's a real thing or, like, a thing worthy of attention. And so to see that a company was interested in it, would put money into it, and then it actually worked and people loved it is just, I think, something that people should take note of in the future of, like, no, it's not even that big of a risk to do something like that, and it's worth it.
Yeah, I think, I hope that, like, especially as rainbow capitalism is a thing, I hope that they expand it to the ace community as much as all of the others, because I've noticed that when you do an ace space, people come, because it doesn't happen much. Like, when I was invited to do some stuff at Prague Pride, which was equally random, they said that was, like, the biggest ace turnout they'd had, and it was, like way more than I expected. Like, I did a talk, and there was, like we ran out of chairs in the room, and it's just because, like, it never happens. So once they do that, like, people are so happy to finally be included or finally have the space that there's, like, an automatic turnout. So I think that if more Pride events, like, thought, let's actually be more blatantly and unambiguously inclusive, then they'd notice probably just how many people that are already there are asexual.
Ace people are consumers too. Yeah, we will throw our money at you if you give us things to throw our money at.
I just had a question, I think, about kind of your thoughts, and we don't have to get too much into this because I know it can turn into, like, sad and nasty discourse, but just kind of, like, thoughts on, like, asexual people's place in the community, or if you've ever, like, felt unwelcome in the general queer community and how you've dealt with that, and, like, if you've kind of had any interaction with that whole kind of just debacle.
I mean, I've noticed people never say anything to my face. Like, people might discuss things on the internet, but no one has ever came up to me and been like, why are you here? Like, no one ever has. I don't know, like, maybe I give off a vibe, I don't know, but people never say anything to my face. So I haven't had any experiences of people telling me I shouldn't be included, but it obviously is something I hear online, and only in queer spaces do I hear it. Like, if I'm doing something, I don't know, for, like, BBC or something, the comments aren't, is she LGBT or not? It's just, get out of here. So it's only in the queer things where it's like, let's start the discourse debate. And I'm like, see, no one else actually cares about this, you know? Like, everyone else is like, she's queer, we don't like it. No one else is actually concerned with whether or not I tick all of those boxes or not. But it's, I don't know, it's something that I think I'm only really mad about it if it's, like, hindering or confrontational. If someone's just like, based on my own personal definition, I don't really get it, I'm like, meh, okay. But if it's coming from a place of, like, I'm scared asexual people are going to come in here and ruin everything, then I'm like, we can sit down and, like, I can put your mind at ease here and we can move past it. But it's one of those things where you kind of have to pick the battles, and it's like, I don't know, if Mary Sue from North Carolina thinks I'm not queer, that doesn't stop me from going to Pride. Like, that doesn't stop me from going to the queer events or speaking or doing work there. So it's like, it's not that much of a big deal for me anyway, personally. But I think if it becomes, like, harassing or, like, bullying, then it's an issue. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Mary Sue's probably not going to be at Pride. So, I mean...
And if we're in the same place, guarantee she wouldn't say anything to me anyway. So it's like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of giving off vibes, okay, Yasmin, should I wear black lipstick more often? Because you seem to rock it, and I know it's all in the confidence, but, like, black is just really bold and it stresses me out. advice for wearing black lipstick.
Well, what's your unusual shade?
I don't know.
You wear like red, I feel like. Like a dark red.
I wear a good solid red sometimes, but I always am afraid of it like getting on my face. So like I like wearing darker lipsticks. It's just I am always afraid of them getting everywhere. So
Yeah, I'm not great at like, I'm one of those people, I'm always like this all the time because I'm worried that I'm going to have it on my teeth. But I think that, I mean, black, it doesn't work for everybody, but I feel like a good way to test it is just to go for maybe like not black, but something as close to black. Like some people, like dark grays really suit if you're paler, or dark gray on me makes me look deceased, so I have to go full black. Or even like dark browns, which again I don't think works on me, but I think of your hair color, that could like something very close to black would work.
I've done a dark brown before. I have.
Yeah, I think, although I do think that you could probably, that you could get away with black.
I'm just very pale, so it would be a very like goth situation, but you know what, let's do it.
It's the season for that, so I feel like that works.
That's true. I think that was the most important question of this entire interview.
Oh, for sure.
It's like discourse aside, let's discuss lipstick.
It's like how there's like lipstick lesbians. It's like, so I'm a lipstick ace, and I have some questions for you. Kayla, do you have any other questions, pressing questions regarding lipstick or asexuality or aromanticism?
I don't have one about lipstick. I feel like I'm fine there. I guess I would just be interested to hear like your advice for other aro ace people who maybe are like struggling either just with like coming to terms with their identity, or they're like seeing all this discourse online and they're really upset about it. Just kind of like advice for kind of being confident and secure in your own identity, because I feel like you do a really great job of that. Obviously you're like very outward with your identity, and of course that's not an option for everyone, but I would love to hear your advice kind of on like what people can do to try to get towards that if they want to.
Well, I feel like one thing I always think, and I don't know if this is actually that helpful, but I always think like, assuming that you're not particularly religious, this could be your only run. This is your only life. This is the only time you're going to live this day. This is the only time you're going to have this time. So how much of it do you really want to spend trying to become something else, which might not work? Like, if this is you and this is how you're going to be forever, if you start rolling with it now, you start rolling with it in 5 years, one of them saves you more time. So I feel like it's good to just kind of be like, how long do I want to dwell on it if it's not going to make a difference? And the same thing kind of applies to like sometimes where I can get caught in a loop if I'm like reading comments or something, and then I've realized I spent like 30 minutes reading through something and I'm like, that wasn't actually a very helpful for my time. I'm never going to get that time back, and I've wasted it on anons on the internet. So and then I'm like, let me just do something I find fun. I think that while the internet can be a helpful source, sometimes it's just like, I think people should definitely try and find ace people in real life and spend less time focusing on like discourse and what will this person think and what will that person think, and just think your sexuality or orientation or lack of it is literally kind of like the most redundant part of you. Like, that's one of the reasons why I didn't mention being asexual for so long, because I was like, how could I possibly talk about what I'm not doing? And it's ironic because I do that all the time. And I was like, I severely underestimated how much you can talk about what I'm not doing. But I was like, this is the absence of something. Like, this isn't even a trait within me. It's a lack of trait. So I feel like I should just focus on other parts of me instead of what I'm not thinking, you know? So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's just how I see it.
Yeah, I mean, as an aroace person, I feel like I'm kind of in the same boat where it's like, I mean, yeah, it's an important part of me, but because it is, like, as you're saying, like, it's a lack of attraction. It's not something that, like, my own brain is like, I'm going to focus on how I'm not attracted to dicks. Like, no, I mean, that's not really what I'm going to be thinking. So, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, and especially, like, not making, like obviously your sexual identity or your romantic identity is going to be a big part of you, but like even for someone like you who it's like part of your career, like it's not all of who you are, you know? Like you're a person who has interests and does things outside of that. It's not your entire personality.
Yeah, it just so happens that that's what I've ended up talking about a lot, which makes me wonder why I bothered getting that master's degree in crime science, because it's never came up again, and this has. So, but yeah, it isn't like, I mean, it literally it took me so long to talk about it, because I thought, who's gonna care about what I'm not doing or what I'm not thinking? Like, I don't often think about how much I don't eat peas. It doesn't come up. Like when I'm like doing my own thing, I don't think about how aromantic I am or how asexual I am until it comes up. So it's, yeah, I just feel like while it is nice, it's good to work it out. But once you've worked it out and you found like comfort in it, like it doesn't need to be like a be all and end all. Like I hear people really stressing about, oh, what if I'm more this word and not that word? And I'm like, it's pretty much the same word and it doesn't manifest that differently. And you're still gonna be waking up in the morning the same way. So it's not that deep, guys. Just chill, just live.
Yeah. And when hopefully in the near future, asexuality becomes more broadly accepted in queer communities and in other communities, then you can use your crime science degree. And then you can be like, I've done my duty.
Yes, you can retire. You can use your degree.
When I'm no longer needed, I bow out.
Incredible. I guess, do you have anything before we go into our beef and our juice for this week? Do you have anything that you would like to add for our listeners?
Well, I want to say this is the first time I've done like a podcast by people on the ace and aromantic spectrum, so that's always fun. And I that also means that this podcast will actually have more of an asexual audience than what I'm used to. So I'll say thank you guys for being nice and giving me opportunities and giving me things to do. And I'll continue to represent you as best as I can. And yeah.
Nice. We love it. All right. Kayla, are we gonna have a poll this week? Is
Oh,
Yasmin the
Lord.
best? Yes or yes? That's the
That's a good
poll.
poll.
We're just gonna is Yasmin the best? Yes or yes? That's our poll. All right.
Good poll.
Kayla, what is your beef and your juice this week?
Okay. My beef is that, you know, when you're like 12 and you decide to like rearrange your room for fun. So my office where I work, we did that today where we like rearranged all of the desks and the tables and all of the plants and literally everything in the office, which was fun until 30 minutes in when my back started hurting and I got really tired and I didn't want to move a 50-pound desk anymore. So that's my
Incredible.
beef. Yes. My juice is I don't know if I've mentioned this very lame thing in past episode, but I got myself like one of those adult paint by numbers recently, and I've been having a grand old time painting. And I've been painting while listening to the podcast My Favorite Murder, which I know I'm like literally 3 years late to, but I love true crime, and they have a very similar vibe to this podcast where they get off on tangents and it's very disorganized, and it's two very funny women, which I'm not claiming that we're two very funny women. Anyway, it's a very good podcast if you like true crime, would recommend.
We're two mediocrely funny women.
Yes, I don't want to, they're like professional comedians. I don't want to sound like I'm comparing us to them. That seems bad. But it's a good podcast, whatever. That's my juice, whatever. Don't
Okay.
worry about it.
My beef and juice are related. Okay. So I was watching a bunch of interviews of Greta Gerwig talking about Little Women. And the way Greta Gerwig talked, her mannerisms and that sort of thing, my first instinct was to think that she like wasn't very smart, 'cause she like hesitates and a lot, and she interrupts herself with random thoughts, and she doesn't have like a huge presence. Like she was talking about directing Meryl Streep in Little Women and how kind of deferential she was to Meryl Streep, and she doesn't have like the directorial aura of like, I'm in
Meryl
charge.
Streep is not in Little Women,
What?
ma'am. Meryl Streep is not in Little Women.
Please hold.
Isn't it Laura Dern?
And also, who has to direct Meryl Streep? Doesn't Meryl Streep just do her own thing? I feel like you
Yeah,
don't
I feel
need
like
to
that'd
really
be
tell Meryl Streep
I
what.
feel like I'd be very afraid to direct Meryl Streep. Is Meryl Streep in Little Women?
Meryl Streep directs You, I think. I don't think that's the director.
Oh, real. Please hold. Please hold.
Are you thinking of Laura Dern, the mom?
She plays Aunt March, yes. Meryl Streep is in Little Women.
Oh, fuck, I'm so stupid.
I actually haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I highly recommend it.
I was thinking of Laura Dern.
It's very... Joe is very Arrowways.
Yes, would recommend. Anyway, sorry, I'm the idiot.
That's why I was so shook when you said that, because I was like, I know for a fact Meryl Streep was in that movie.
No, yeah, I'm the idiot. Never mind.
Okay,
Cool. I'm stupid. So, don't listen to me.
TLDR, Greta Gerwig doesn't have like a super like big presence when she was talking. And for some reason, my brain interpreted that as like not that smart, because that's what I've been socialized to believe, that like women aren't like inherently smart. Or, like, inherently talented or inherently funny or what have you. And then I kept watching the interviews and I realized that she is so fucking smart and she's a really good director. And I got, like, she's very thoughtful and I just got very mad that I judged her because of the way she talked. That, like, society has, like, been like, here's the thing. This person has sort of a vocal fry. They're an idiot. That's a dumb woman. And so then I got very mad at society for making me think that, and I got very mad at the patriarchy. And that's my beef. But then my juice, my juice is that then I was thinking about this is kind of still beef. I realized that Greta Gerwig talks a lot similarly to the way that I do. Like, I say all the time. And I was like, oh, she talks like me, like when she's, you know, I feel like I don't take up a lot of space, and when I'm really nervous, I like hold my breath in way too much, and I realized that she was doing the same thing, and I was like, me. And I was like, you know what? Greta, we are the same. You're way more talented than me, but we are the same, and I shouldn't hold you to another standard, and now I feel empowered by you, and that's my juice. Thank you for joining me on that long, long road.
That was a journey.
It was a journey.
I've never actually heard Greta Gerwig speak before, so now I'm curious as to what she sounds like. I always go to mix up with that little girl who talks about climate change.
Greta Thunberg.
Talking about the climate change girl. And then I was like,
really funny.
The women one, okay.
That is very funny.
Greta something Greta. Ending in, right?
yeah, Greta Gerwig and it's Greta true. Thunberg. So they're basically the same person.
It's true.
Amazing. All right, Yasmin, after that wild experience, what is your beef and your juice?
Okay, well, I mean, I was thinking that I should do something like topical and serious. So
you can do whatever you want.
Oh no, that's not.
Because I haven't really encountered much things to have beef with at the moment. So I feel like this year, like late 2019, early 2020, we've had a few like good ace moments and some bad ace moments. So I'd say that like my beef would be Ace Erasure would be my beef, because that's a thing I've been noticing a bit more. With people saying I'm asexual and people being like, eh, but did they say that though? And I'm like, yeah, they did. They literally said it. I can literally show you. That's something I noticed, obviously, in 2019 with the Rolling Stone thing. And then recently with, you guys might have heard, Paulie Perry, I'm going to mispronounce her last name, the girl from NCIS. Mm-hmm. Like, where she pretty much said, I'm ace. And then people are like, but is she though? Did she say it? Like, kind of clear what she said. So yeah, that's beef, because I'm thinking, how much more obvious do people have to make it unless they start waving the flag around?
Tattoo the flag on your forehead.
Yeah, I feel like you literally have to do that before people are like, wow, I think they're trying to say they're asexual. I think that's what this is. And then I guess my juice would be good ace representation, which we also got recently. And I don't know if you guys get it over there. You might do Sex Education, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
We recently got, and I know the person who was consulting on it and had done loads of research into it, and it's actually really good ace representation on a mainstream show. I don't watch the show, but I've heard that part was good. And I know that show would probably appeal to audiences that aren't asexual, so that was probably quite an informative thing. So yeah, things like that, that's juice, I guess. I like that. So
yeah. My friend texted me and was like, season 2 of Sex Education, asexuality. And I was like, yes. Am I ever going to watch it? I don't know. Yeah. But it's there.
I mean, I think it's in like one, like episode 4 for like themes. So, and I think there are times online so you can skip the rest of
That's true. That's true.
Everything else in it. I mean, I thought it's a very well-received show. It's just probably not my kind of show. So
yeah,
That's good. So yeah, that's the juice and that's the beef.
Amazing. Beautiful. We love thematic beef and juice.
I love it.
You can tell us about your beef and juice on our social media at SoundsFakePod. Yasmin, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me at the Yasmin Benoit. So TheYasminBenoit. It's the same on Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And yeah. And using the This Is What Asexual Looks Like hashtag. If you use it, I'll see it. So,
yes, amazing. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/soundsfakepod. Our $5 patrons are Jennifer Smart, Astrutha Vinokota, Austin Lay, Drew Finney, Perry Fierro, D, Megan Rowell, Quinn Pollock, Emily Collins, Tim, Book Marvel, Changeling MX, Derek and Carissa, Simona Simon, and Eric Sago, and Dia Chappelle, who recently moved up. Thank you, Dia. Was she the one who was binging the entire podcast?
Yes, she has finished her binge, which is impressive. Very surprising and impressive. So thank you, Dia, for sitting through what must have been very terrible first episodes.
Good on you, Dia.
And Jamie Jack. Thank you, Jamie, our newest $5 patron. Woo!
All right, our $10 patrons are Kevin and Tessa at Dirty Uncle Kevin at Tessa_M_K, Arkness, who'd like to promote The Trevor Project, Benjamin Ibarra, who would like to promote Tabletop Games, Anonymous, who would like to promote Halloween at any time of year, because that's the way you should live your life. Sarah McCoy, who would like to promote Podcast From a Planet Weird. My Aunt Jeannie, who would like to promote Christopher's Haven. Our $15 patrons are Nathaniel White, NathanielJWhiteDesigns.com. My mom, Julie, who would like to promote Free Mom Hugs. Sarah Jones, who is at Eternal Lolly Everywhere. And Dragonfly. So Yasmin, Dragonfly doesn't tell us anything to promote, so we just pick something for them every week. So I think this week Dragonfly is going to promote you.
Aw, thank you, Dragonfly. I love them.
Yeah, we're just here to support. Is there anything else, I guess, other than your own social media and stuff, is there anything you want to promote?
I mean, technically I don't finish recording it until tomorrow, but I do have a BBC Sounds radio series coming out where I was interviewing asexual people for the past year. So, and you'll probably recognize quite a few of the people I talked to in it, because I kind of went around the community, and there's some like YouTubers in there and people you guys probably know. So yeah, that'll be coming out hopefully in February if I finish recording it tomorrow, and it'll be on BBC Sounds. So yeah.
We talked to Sam for that, so we may or may not, I don't know if we're gonna, I don't know. That's the tea. All right. BBC Sounds, listen to Yasmin's thing. Thanks for listening. Tune in next Sunday for more Rest in Your Ears.
Until then, take good care of your cows.